Hey listeners, Lex on the Decks here. Before you get stuck into this episode of Hot Girls, I wanted to let you know about something else you may be interested in. Though Hot Girls in its podcast format isn't releasing new episodes any longer, if you head over to my Substack, which is lexonthedecks.substack.com, you'll find more interviews and insight on gender minority artists and how to overcome any barriers to entry. You'll also get the opportunity to sign up to my weekly newsletter, 5 Good Things. This is an email letter which will land in your inbox on Fridays, sharing 5 of my favourite cultural or creative discoveries of the week. You'll find all that on lexonthedecks.substack.com. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy this episode of Hot Girls.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Hot Girls with me, Lex, on the Decks. This is the first episode of season 5. Oh my god. What a journey we've been on. I have learned so much over the past 4 seasons and that does not stop. This season is probably our best yet, if I can say that. We have some incredible guests from the worlds of electronic music, rap music, soul, a whole range, all sharing their journeys and their experiences with us. All working towards and championing a more diverse industry. Kicking us off this week is Naomi Campagnu, who released one of the most beautiful EPs I have heard in a long time. It got a lot of championing on BBC Radio 1, as well as being played on Love Island. Here she talks about recording the EP herself and how she found the confidence to do so. Naomi Campagnu on Hot Girls. Let's go.
Ladies, gentlemen,
listen up. You're listening to Hot Girls. With Lex on the Decks.
We in the mix.
It's fire.
Keep it going. We on fire.
From London for the world.
Let's go in.
When it came to this EP, because I recorded everything myself, that was the struggle in the early days. And I think when it comes to like music technology, I almost like think of it as like a bit of like a beast that you have to like tame in a way. Because yeah. Do you know, it's me or you, Logic. One of us is going to like have to get it together. Do you know what I mean? So I had to figure a lot of things out. And in the beginning, it was small things like this, the mic not working, or I come in and for some reason, things just aren't working. Everything's plugged in great. I've asked, you know, the people that own the studio, like the gear isn't working, and they've come in and they just don't know why it's not working. Those things in the beginning definitely made the journey a lot harder, because it's like I'm just trying to grapple with this, I'm trying to master this, but like it gave me a fight. It really, really did, you know.
It's so, get it, because it's so frustrating. Yeah. You're just trying to create or put out there what is inside or what you're kind of hearing, and then you literally can't. And you're like, well, is this not supposed to be? Like, what is this?
I remember with a song with Who I Am on the EP, I remember early days, like I would record the piano through like a MIDI on my laptop, and then I'd bring up the project on the big computer. I don't know, maybe it was the devil working against me. I don't know. But for whatever reason, if I played it on the big computer, bearing in mind it's still Logic, I've not changed anything. Everything was out of time. Everything. And I just remember like being in here, pulling my hair out. Why are you doing this to me? I haven't done anything to deserve this. Literally. Like, why is this happening? But, you know, I think those early struggles were actually quite necessary, because it's something like that doesn't happen to me today. Like, I just know how to finesse and just get things to, I'm like, Logic, listen, you're going to listen to me today. We need
whip it into shape.
Oh, 100%. It's like, I've got things to do, music to release. You are going to listen today.
Those testings are so painful when they happen, but yeah. It's the best place and time for it to happen.
Yeah.
When you're like, well, there's no one here to really see this. So like, I kind of can mess up infinitely or go through as many kind of painful processes because no one else is going to know.
And it's still early. I mean, if I was going through that now, that would be very embarrassing if I was going through like little things like that now. But you kind of have to go through things like that so you could just get to that place where you figure things out for yourself. And I think part of my story has been I've made a lot of mistakes in this process, but I think those mistakes were crucial because I learned so much and actually was able to make the music that I wanted to make because I made mistakes and wasn't afraid to make them and experiment.
Who I Am, it's so interesting hearing you say about that song as well, because it's a beautiful song and it's my personal favorite off the EP. I don't know if you have your favorite. Oh, maybe I'll ask you that later.
It is my favorite, actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
There's something about the sound of it, though, that it's like, it feels like you're there in that moment, like expressing yourself fresh.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that song, I think, is today, I think, the most deeply personal song I've ever written. And actually, I think when I first wrote it, because I wrote it like end of 2018, I almost didn't want to, like, I was almost like afraid of it because it's so raw, it's so honest. It was a time in my life when I didn't feel good enough, when I didn't feel like I was worth anything. And to say that, you know, I've overcome there was a time where it was just too honest. It was too vulnerable for me. The story behind the song, I think, was also a story about triumph and trials and error. Even though I just, you know, previously mentioned that, you know, I recorded it on MIDI and it wasn't working. Like, I actually ended up scrapping that whole MIDI version and actually recording real piano for the track. But like, there was just so many things. Vocally, I was in my head a lot with the song. So I know my manager, when he was here, when he came to studio sessions, he's like, you know, I'm going to kill you, right? Because you do not need to record this again. I'm going to record it again. You know what's insane? It's the fact that I would go through all the trouble, drive myself mad, record the song again, and go, actually, you were right, the first version was better.
Yeah, like the first one. Yeah, just needed to check. Just wanted to do due diligence.
I just wanted to check. You know, if I didn't do this, then I'd just sing my whole life going, I should have re-recorded it. But I think that came from a place of like just not feeling that I was able to deliver the song in the magnitude that it needed to be in. And I think in the beginning, I was in my head so much about the whole process of this EP because, you know, I mean, I had recorded my own stuff before, but to make a whole project and to be responsible for every single component, it was overwhelming. And I think that's what made some of the journey a lot harder for me. I think I was making it harder for myself because I just didn't believe I could do it.
Well, that song, the recording now sounds so brave. And maybe that's part of it because it was part of overcoming that vulnerability and that space that you had between feeling those emotions and like going through that. And being like, okay, I'm doing this now. I'm putting this EP out. I'm creating it to the most perfect possible point that I can.
And I'm like the biggest perfectionist ever as well. That's what also made things harder for me as well because it had to be perfect, but perfection doesn't really exist. And I had to come to a place where I felt comfortable that the music was good enough, that it was great where it's at. And in my head, I actually had to just end up telling myself, do you know what? Save it for the live version. You know that thing you want to re-record? Do it for the live version. Do it for the live version. Because I just knew we'd be here all day and all year and all my life, just re-recording, trying to make something perfect when it already is. You know?
Yeah. So your kind of comfort blanket for yourself is essentially saying, you've got a second chance. You had to feel that way.
Which is mad. But I think after I mix it and like we master and we put it out, I'm like, oh, it's fine. As it is, you know?
But exactly as you say, probably if you hadn't done all those re-records, you might be thinking the other way, like, oh.
Yeah.
Well, Naomi, I wanted to wind back because I was wondering when you actually started playing piano in the first place.
It's a good question. I started playing piano as a child, like tinkering. I never took any formal lessons. And I don't know why I didn't take any formal lessons, but I'm self-taught on the piano. From a child, like, I'd always just play the piano and tinker. And like, I went to like a music school on the weekends when I was a child. And these kids who were classically trained pianists, they would teach me like Fur Elise and all these other songs. And so I kind of got the technical skills from them. And then when I got into college, I went to another music college. It was paramount to my development as a songwriter that I knew how to play and to play well. And at the time, like, I was working with other pianists and other instrumentalists. Like, I just write the song and sing. Like, I had the melody and the lyrics, but I had no chords. I had no music behind it. And I'd take it to these pianists and they'd basically figure out the chords. But I just felt like that wasn't enough for me because in my head, I didn't hear that chord. I didn't hear it in that way. So I made it my mission. I was like, I'm going to learn how to play piano and I'm going to play it very well so I can articulate what's in my head, you know?
Yeah, because as soon as you hand over to someone else in any capacity, they're adding themselves into it. And that can be a great thing.
Yeah.
It's part of the beauty of collaboration. But exactly as you said, when you're trying to compose something and you know what you want it to sound like.
Yeah, yeah.
I can see that being frustrating.
Oh, 100%. And I needed to make it clear what I wanted to hear. And at the time when I was learning piano in college, I didn't have a keyboard at home. So at home, what I would do is I'd go on this website. I think it was called like Key Chords or Drumbot. And you could drag in guitar chords, like, and you can like make yourself like a four chord progression loop. And I used to write my songs that way. And then so I just take what the chords were and then go to college and then Google how to play B flat minor, how to play this. So I think in some ways that kind of pushed my level of piano playing up quite a lot because I was playing quite advanced chords quite early on in my journey. But yeah, I think ownership is important.
Yeah. And are you someone who doesn't get too frustrated by the learning process? Because that's very dedicated of you, I think, to kind of keep going back and to self-teaching and to finding space and time to kind of obsess piano. As a youngster, I loved music, but I couldn't really be bothered with my piano lessons and stuff. Yeah. I wasn't very diligent. So I'm, yeah, interested to see whether that was just a natural quality in you.
I think that is a bit of a natural quality in me. I'm a bit of a nerd, I feel like. I could tell you like random facts about like the 16th century, which is just me knowing things. like I love to learn and I felt so connected to the piano for some reason. I felt like we were just so connected. And so when you feel that connected to something, I was like desperate to get it and to play well, you know. Mm-hmm. Similarly to you though, when I was in college, I was offered free guitar lessons and I took them. But guitar and me, we just didn't resonate in the same way that I did with piano. I just feel like when you have a story to tell, when you have a song to write, you will go above and beyond to make it happen and make it happen and learn how to do it, you know?
Yeah. So then what was the process leading up to actually writing and recording an EP? It sounds like you made the decision to create one.
Yeah.
Maybe a little while before you actually, between then and the actual release of this one.
I mean, the EP, I think, has been in the works for a long time. A lot of the songs are like quite old. I'm pretty sure Only is like maybe approaching 4 years old. So I've always had like, you know, I was writing songs, always was tinkering about and things like that. And we were always kind of working towards a project of some sorts, an EP. You know, the track listing, the amount of songs were always, you know, up in the air and things like that. But I think at the time we were kind of, I guess, doing the traditional route. I was just working with lots of different producers. And I felt like in my soul, again, I think it resonates with the pianist who couldn't articulate what I had in my head. Mm. I felt like these producers weren't articulating what I want to put in the world.
Mm.
And I felt like it was one of those things where like, this is your vision and I'm just singing it. Whereas I needed someone to help make my own vision. And that person kind of didn't appear ever. Like, that person was still looking for that person to come on board and help me build my vision. And then I had recorded only on my own before, and I had a conversation with my manager, and he just said, look, you're the one that's writing and recording these amazing songs, just do it yourself.
Alicia Keys, when she was like in her early days of songwriting, she was in loads of studio sessions,
right?
And basically, like, all her whole first album she recorded by herself in her time outside of those studio sessions, because she just didn't really like the music that was coming out of those sessions. And I do think sometimes if you're a real songwriter,
mm-hmm.
then that is such a part of what you want to put out as much as anything else. So I completely understand that, even though you're adding loads of challenges. And what do you think the biggest challenge was of the actual recording process and making that decision to record it yourself?
I think the challenge was me, as in like me kind of doubting myself. Had I not have doubted myself, this project would have been finished and out like maybe a year ago or so. But when you are constantly doubting every decision you make, it's hard for you to do anything, and you can kind of be like crippled by the fear of it not being perfect. You know, the recording, mixing and production, these are things that you can always learn on and improve on and things like that. And yeah, I made some mistakes in each of those things in my journey. But had my mindset from day one been like, I can do this, I'm able to do this, I think that would have made the whole journey much more manageable, much easier. Like, I would have had like a better time in the beginning. There was a point during the first lockdown where it just clicked for me. And I was kind of like, you know what? I'm not making this music for anyone else but me, even though it is out and other people listen to it. But I was like, I need to only impress myself, and that's it. And then when I decided that, that's when the EP was finished. I mean, I say finished in exclamation marks. I went back and recorded five strings for Who I Am. It never really ends with me, you know.
Had you played many of your family or friends much of your music before you recorded it on the EP? Or did you have a moment where you were like, this is it, guys?
Both. Yes and no. Certain songs they had heard live when I used to do like live gigs back in 2019. So songs like Yellow Bridge and Who I Am, that was part of my live set. Songs like What About Me and Only... the first time they heard it was a recording, like an early recording of it. And What About Me, the first time they heard it was also a recording of it. And that's just because, you know, things came about at different times. What About Me, I had written it or started writing it in 2019, but I didn't finish writing it until, I would say, May 2020, or June 2020, actually. Mm-hmm. So they kind of had an idea of some of my other songs, but they didn't kind of have like the overall project there with them in the early days, no.
And then once you'd actually finished it and you were like, okay, I am ready to step back and put it out in the world, what was that process? It sounds like you'd already worked with your manager for quite a while.
Yeah, we've been working for like 5 or 6 years maybe. But yeah, we were just ready to put it out. I mean, we was itching to put it out. We had been working together for years. And I mean, he's been so patient with me and my journey to coming to a point to put music out. Because I think we both felt like we didn't want to rush putting out anything. And there's, you know, Only, for example, has had so many mixes, you know, it's been mixed by a couple mix engineers. Mm. Same as some of the other songs. And those early mixes, if they were still up, I wouldn't be happy with them, you know? So when it came time for us to finally put stuff out, we were kind of like, okay, we know we're ready. We know our strategy, how we want to approach things, and we're just good to go. And we, obviously when I put out Only, that was like in the middle of lockdown. So I guess the strategy kind of changed a little, because we would have hoped to have been doing live stuff during that time as well. But I'm just, I know, right? But I'm just lucky that the radio really picked it up. Like Jess Izzat and Jack Saunders really championed my music very, very, very early on. Like, it was a time where it felt like I was getting spun on Radio 1 at least once a week.
Well, I was looking at your Twitter and it's like, Radio 1, replay, Radio 1, replay. And like, for a first EP, that is insane and amazing and so exciting. You must just be like, oh, they're doing it again.
My dad is like, he owes, like, I owe Jack Saunders and Jess Izzet a drink. He's like, I'm going to buy them a Coca-Cola or something. Like, he's just so appreciative of the fact that they play me on the radio so much, you know. And it's so organic as well. Like, you know, it feels like a real natural progression. And through that, those initial, you know, plays on the radio, that's kind of where we started building our fan base and building listeners and, like, getting that out there and letting people know, look, this is Naomi Campagnoli.
It's Naomi. She's serious. She's here.
She's here. She's not going anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And okay, I don't watch it and I don't, well, I suppose you have to say you do, even if you don't now, but you got the Love Island play and the size of that audience I know is like literally the biggest in the UK. So again, that's really big. Do you know how that happened?
Yeah, I mean, I will say in the way that I kind of brought it forward to happen, I remember like I was having like this deep conversation with God and I kind of said to him like as a joke, do you think we could get it on Love
Island? Should we go for the Love Island play?
So if it doesn't happen, it's all right. I'm not greedy, it's all right. It's all right. And he goes, tell that to your manager, tell that to Luke. I was like, okay. So I told him as a joke, you know, wouldn't it be fun if we could make this happen? But he's like a soldier. If you tell him like, you know, I have this idea, he's going to make it happen. And he reached out to their sync team and played the, you know, sent them the music, and you know, they're kind of just like, okay, cool, we like it, you know. I'm like, okay.
I love that your manager's like, if you heard that, we need to go from it, like that is specific, so
yeah, let's just make it happen. I'll never forget, like, he called me, I think the day of, he called me at like, I think it was like 9 a.m right? And I'm not a morning person. I'm usually like, don't call me and before 10 a.m my brain is not on, right? Which is bad. I need to get better at that. And he was like, could you send me the PRS code for Only? And I was like, yeah, what do you need it for? Do you need to send it right now? Like, what do you want, sir? And he was like, they're gonna play on Love Island tonight, you better get up and
okay,
send me the code. Yeah, get up, it's 9 a.m get up. And we sent him the code, and even though they had sent the forms through, we had to sign like the agreement, I still didn't believe that they were going to play it, because I was like, no, I'm like, imagine if they don't, what if they change their mind
these days? That would be like, you know, I don't know if you're a Friends fan, but you know when Joey gets all his friends around and his family to watch his scene in a movie, yeah. Yeah. And then like he's cut out.
Well, yes. So I didn't want that to happen to me. So I was like, you know what? Like, once if I get confirmation, then I'm a tell my friends and family. And like 30 minutes before the show started, we got the confirmation that it's in tonight's show. So I've already started ringing up. Oh my God, playing it tonight. What you do? Get off. Like, my friend was at work, bless her. I said, it's on Love Island. She's at work, bless her. She's got Love Island on her phone, like watching it live. And like when it first, because I, for some reason, I thought they'd play it maybe later on in the show or something like that. And like, I'm watching the show with my sister, you know, my dad's super excited, but he's not a Love Island fan.
So. I was going to say probably the first time he'd watched it, maybe.
Yeah. And I actually was like to him, I'll just call you when it's on. Just because Love Island isn't like something you're going to watch with your dad.
You don't want to watch it with your dad, no.
And my dad has a thing, like, till this day, like, I'm 22 years old. If there's a film on and people are kissing, my dad's changing the channel.
Like, he's like, oh, you don't need to see this.
Yeah, I'm like, Dad, I'm a grown woman, right? But so he was in the next room. I'm chatting with my sister, like, the show's on. I've actually low-key forgotten that this is why we're watching the show. Because I watch Love Island anyway. I enjoy watching the show. And then I was like, look, that piano sounds quite familiar to me. Wait, it's my song. But then, like, the song comes on, I'm like going nuts. I call my dad in, and my dad's like, "Oh my god, oh my god!" And my dad is the type, bless him, he just talks over everything. So I'm like, "Dad, I can't hear it. There's no yelling. I can't hear it, right?" So my dad's settled down now, and like, as I'm like in awe of them playing the song, right? I'm like, it's been going on for a bit, you know, like, because I thought they'd play like 30 seconds and that's like, I would listen, that's enough for me, that's a blessing in and of itself, enough for me. But they played it for like 3 minutes, like almost the whole song. I was just so in awe, and it's like when I was watching it live on telly, it just didn't feel real to me. Like, am I putting on like the song over, or am I like, this is not real?
Then, yeah, you're like, is everyone else getting the same version on their TV screens?
Maybe they just hacked onto my TV and just put on the song. Because yeah. I don't believe this. And then after the song comes off, I couldn't even go on Instagram. My Instagram's like blowing up from like people who've heard it on the show. Oh my God, I've just heard your song on Love Island. It's amazing. And I'm just there like, I had a sore throat because I just couldn't stop screaming. My friends were calling. You know, it was such a triumph. We had worked so hard to get to that point, to get to a point where the music is being celebrated on the national stage. It was amazing. I'll honestly never forget that.
You said you kind of had that conversation with God, and that triggered the conversation that you then had with your manager. Are you quite a consistent... Do you have quite consistent conversations with God, or do you pray, or what's your sort of spiritual practice?
Oh yeah, I love to pray. And I actually think the process of this EP made me more reliant on God, and it strengthened my relationship with God. I mean, I've got Jesus tattooed in.
Oh, got it tattooed. You know, not going anywhere.
You know, but I needed strength from an outer source, you know. I needed that kind of divine kind of like, it's going to be okay, you know? And yeah, like, I think me coming to God actually, I think actually transformed my, not only my life, but me being able to finish this EP. I remember in early April, I think late April, May, when I was like, okay, I'm going to go back into recording this EP. Like, I was so worried. I still had those that anxiety and that fear. I just remember like God speaking to me so clearly, and he was kind of just like, do the music and I'll do the rest. And it was kind of like, okay, that's enough. And then when I'm speaking to God, like, a lot of the things that I was dealing with, or the issues that I was grappling with, was like not being good enough, not being able enough. And God's like, you're fearfully and wonderfully made. You can do this. I've seen it. I've sent you down this path. I wouldn't send you down this path if I knew you couldn't do it. That kind of like confidence, you know, you can't shake that. That's why I was able to finish it off. When God says, you know, you just have to finish the music and I'll do the rest. Listen.
You're like, okay, fine.
I'll just do the music and God will do the rest. And he is doing the rest, you know. Everything is going just organically. Everything is pushing forward. And all I had to do was like trust and believe and just focus on the gift that he's given me and music, you know.
Maybe that's why you're such a perfectionist, though, because you're like, this is my only role.
I don't do anything else but this. We're going to get this right.
It's obviously like a very much you've been building on your craft and working on your songwriting and your singing and your music for a while, but in terms of actually you're releasing, you're at this quite like foundation part of your career.
Have
you got good people to turn to for advice, or have you had bits of like little nice nuggets from people that
My vocal coach number one is someone that I genuinely don't know where I'd be if I didn't meet him. He is someone like, I'm like, oh my God, Joshua, I can't do it. Now, all my days. Listen, do you know what I mean? He's just there to give you a good word to really push you. You know, my manager is someone else that really just is there to like really support me and really push me. And I have like a good network of people in the industry that are like, I consider my close friends, that whenever I am having a dilemma, or I don't know, or I need advice, they're there to be like, okay, this is how you should do it, or this is my opinion. And I think that support system is so crucial. You just need it. I mean, every person needs a support system like that, to kind of like, when you feel confused, you go to that person and they kind of like encourage you. And yeah, it's early days for me, but I think we've made a great start. Based off of not only based off of like conversations that I've had with my manager and decisions we made together, but just the support system we have as well.
So have you been able to perform this live since you actually released the EP?
No, not at all. I haven't performed live since September 2019, which is a long time ago.
Wow. I mean,
that was like my last gig of that year. I did lots of gigging that year. I did like Notting Hill Arts Club, I did Bushdog. I opened for a Cape Verdean artist by the name of Maya Andre, like did lots. And I think it was a great, you know, platform, because I wanted to, you know, do that, put out music and then continue doing those sorts of gigs. But then the pandemic hit, and then I just went total focusing on the music, getting the music right. But we're still, me and my live agent, we're still kind of plotting and planning shows for the end of the year and early into next year, like headline shows and opening for people, because I miss singing live. You know, I think to hear something live, you know, it just adds another dimension to that song and to the experience of the listener.
It's a surreal thing, isn't it? Because you record these songs and you put so much into them, but exactly as you say, once you've done it and you've put it out there in the world, it's really not yours anymore. It's kind of, then it becomes the listeners, and it takes on its own meaning for them. So performing live, you get a little bit more of like, you get to see those people a bit more. And it probably feels a bit more real than when you see like a play count go up or a message or whatever. And you're like, that's cool. That's nice. That's an interaction. But I don't know how that person's experiencing it.
And in my head, I'm just like, I can't imagine. Like, I think last time I checked, I'm on just under like 4,000 monthly listeners or whatever. I can't imagine 4,000 people, you know? You know, once we get to that point where we're doing live and we've packed out a room, then it feels real. Like, this isn't just like YouTube comments. This isn't just tweets or Instagram DMs. This music is making waves in the real world. So I'm honestly looking forward to that, you know, to really.
And when it's like 400,000 people, and then you're gonna be like, I've never seen 400,000 people.
No, literally, I'll be like, I've never, like, in a room, like, I always try and imagine 400,000 people in my bedroom, like, you could fit them all in here, like, you wouldn't be able to. But that's just how many people that your voice and your music has affected, you know. I think that's really powerful.
I think that's really cool as well. And that would be quite special, I think, going back to live and feeling that energy again.
Oh, 100%.
How are you in terms of, like, when it comes to your next output? Are you someone who's constantly writing, constantly creating, or are you in a space of, I mean, you're in a studio now, so I imagine so to a point, but
yeah.
Or are you in a space where you're like, just enjoy this, enjoy these songs?
A bit of both, if I'm being honest. I feel like I haven't gone back to like hardcore daily songwriting yet, which we will get there. But right now, me and my manager are kind of, this next project that we want to release at some point next year or the year after, we kind of want to now bring on some people and just finding the right, you know, producers, instrumentalists to come on board for the next evolution in what I'm doing. I've got lots of songs kind of archived already, songs I've written over the years. You know, I'm a real writer. I've always got something. Now we're thinking of like, okay, this person could be really sick, you know, this person can come on board and we can create something magical. So yeah, it's a bit of both. I think once I find the right people, then it's going to be like all systems go, don't speak to me for 3 months, we're writing a record, you know, that kind
of. Yeah. Who are the artists maybe this year that you've been excited by their work or that you've had a repeat? And feel free to look at your Spotify or whatever if you need to, or Apple Music or Amazon.
Well, I think off the top of my head, while I load up my Spotify, Yeba is that. I think that's one of the things I admire from her is the fact that she can sing. Like she's an artist where I'm like, you can bloody sing. Same as Mariah Carey. I got really into Mariah Carey this year. And basically my manager got me her memoir for Christmas. And I was like, thank you. And I read it during lockdown. And I just have never felt so connected to someone, like a celebrity or something. Because I think, you know, she really, really did grind. Like she really came from nothing. And when you hear her early stuff, that woman can sing. She can have, listen, she's insane.
That is so interesting. And I actually just want to hear a bit more about it because Mariah Carey, to me, doesn't come across as the most relatable down-to-earth person in the world. No. She has this sort of like diva aura.
I think that's because I always say people just need to read her book. Mm-hmm. When you read the book, I think you understand her a lot more. And yeah, like she's got like this diva aura around her now. That's not necessarily what I connect with her. I think it's funny, to be honest with you, like her little, like, she's a diva and she deserves it.
Yeah.
The woman was like, she spoke about, you know, basically having nothing, like sleeping on floors, being hungry, going hungry. She said, I remember off the top of my head, she said something in her book, like if she had a studio session, she'd have to choose between eating and getting the train there. But the music is great. Like she can really sing and also is an amazing songwriter. I mean, listen, whoever your favorite is, it's kind of like, did your favorite write 19 number ones? I don't think they did, you know? Mm. So like she can write and she's extremely talented. Like that's why I just love her, you know?
The final question I have for you, Naomi, is what would you describe as your happy place? Where is the place that you feel most like at one with yourself?
That is a good question. Can I say that I don't think there is a place, a place you go to and you feel at one with yourself. I think it's a presence that you feel. And obviously, like, I am a Christian, so when I feel most at peace is when I'm in prayer, if I'm being honest, because everything kind of feels whole and complete when I'm in prayer. But also when I'm in the presence of good friends, like I've got some good, good friends around me. That's when I feel very happy, you know, when we're laughing about the dumbest of things. When I'm with my family as well, like my dad is like my best friend. I love him so much. And he knows that. That's why he annoys me all the time. But when I'm with him, when I'm with my brother and my sister and my mum, that's when I'm happy. And I always say, like, you know, I have no immediate plans to ever move out because I just love hanging out with them so much. So yeah, happiness isn't a place. I think happiness is a presence. Mm,
that's really beautiful. And I agree. I love it. I was reflecting earlier on it. I was like, I think when I feel good, like when I feel good, I kind of feel good wherever I am.
Yeah. Mm. I think if happiness is a place, then you can't be happy until you're in that place, you know. Mm-hmm. There's like a lyric by in a Disclosure song that I think always resonates me. It's, home is where the heart is, so I gave it to you in a paper bag. It's kind of like, you know, home is will be with you wherever you go, and you don't have to be in a certain place to feel happy and to feel home.
Amazing EP, like huge congratulations. And I'm so excited to hear more from you and hear all of your new music that comes out. If people are listening and they've just been introduced to you, they've probably heard you on the radio already, but where can they find you? Where can they look you up?
They can look me up basically on any platform at Naomi Campenu. Campenu being spelled K-I-M-P-E-N-U. And yeah, basically just do a Googles.
Just a little Googles.
I'm not hard to find.
I will also say, I love your press shot.
Thank you.
Stunning.
Thank you.
Just like beautiful, like very kind of like classic.
I think with press shots, it's like, you know, it's something you really have to think about. Like, who am I as an artist? What do I want to put out? And I thought, you know, it reflected the music, the press shots. Very classic, dark.
What up, Lex?
We keep our eyes on the prize. It's not no surprise. Good women, we're destined to rise. Inspiring, celebrating, uplifting the new generation.